Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh, Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Throw game for the win! Ayler's gone! Goodbye, touchdown, Indy! Woo! IU! America! They got a football team now!
It's pretty simple, I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop! Oh.
Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Hello, everybody. Welcome aboard to another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio, coming to you from high atop Rickhouse number one from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Thursday, post Pacers up 2-1 in the NBA Finals Thursday, I should add to that. I hope everyone is doing well, no matter where or how you're listening, whether it's on one of our great radio station affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref. Always the right call down in Evansville, and the voice of the region up in the region on 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJOB, and in Fort Wayne on Fort Wayne Sports Station, 1380, The Fan. Keep it locked right where you got it all day. You don't need to go anywhere else. If you're following along on social media, you know the routine. Hit the subscribe and like button, but the like buttons mean a lot. So we would really appreciate it if you do that. Just take the 2 seconds it takes and bang, hit on that. But plenty to get to today. Looking forward to another fun show as Coach will be joining us as usual in his 9 o'clock spot. Bob Kravitz will be along. We'll talk to Kristen Airy, who got to call his first NBA Finals ever last night. What a cool gesture by the Pacers and Mark Boyle, the regular radio play-by-play guy. Saw a tweet that said he shouldn't be punished because he chose TV over radio. We thought that it would be nice to let Chris sit in and call the second quarter of the game last night, which he graciously accepted, of course. And Chris got to call the NBA a win, no less, but the second quarter last night of the game. So look forward to talking to him about that and about the game overall, as he had an up close and seat in color, live and in color. Man, absolutely. And we'll get to talk to Nick Costco from On Three. We'll talk about what the Big Ten's going to look like, college football in general, what thoughts on the Hoosiers. Nick had, I think he had Indiana going 9-3, and someone was commenting on one of the shows one day, and I'm like, man, he's a national guy picking Indiana to win 9 games, and he was saying, well, you don't have faith in Indiana. They're going to be better than that. Well, it's not that, but think about that. How many national people are out there picking Indiana to win 9 games? They've done that one time, two times in their history? So, but yeah, look forward to that. And the coach will be along, and like I said, we'll get a double dose of him and Sir Bob Kravitz as well. Hope everyone is doing well. Las Vegas Larry is not in Las Vegas. He is in Bloomington today. So, man, went to the Pacers game last night. Wow. Yeah. What's a good reason to come in for? Speaking of what's Las Vegas, Larry, I have to be out in Las Vegas, I believe, here in, a couple of weeks? No, thank gosh, it's next month. Whoo! Big Ten Football Media Day sneaking up on us before we know it. It'll be here. Thank goodness that is next month. But, that'll be just around the corner. And we'll be talking about, like I said, with Nick Costco joining us. We'll talk about that. And we'll get Coach's thoughts as well. As, man, I'm telling you, I know you hear me say it every day, but the Hoosier.com is putting out constant great content. And by that, I mean position breakdowns, reviews, the breaking news stories, the story this week about the 7'3" Italian visitor coming to visit Indiana. Came first at thehoosier.com. So definitely go check that out. But plenty of football in there as well, as Indiana has just been landing either the commitments or lots of great things. But now, the biggest news yet, 2026 four-star edge rusher Kevontae Hougan has flipped his pledge from Louisville to Indiana after a great visit with the Hoosiers. Now, that's great news and something to celebrate, no doubt, as it shows, again, as I talked yesterday, Indiana's recruiting prowess is going to continue to get better. This is something we'll be talking to Nick about with as well. So looking forward to that. And this is a big deal. I don't want to go too much into it since we're coach will be joining us here in a little bit. So I'll save that, but that's some big news, man. That's the kind of stuff that you're getting in at the Hoosier.com, but not just that, interviews with people like Kevontae. So that's a huge, huge, huge get for Indiana. So we'll talk more about that soon, man. But, boy, the recruiting continues to amp up for Indiana. The good thing is it's next season, guys. So Louisville's going to keep working on him. That is one thing you can be sure about without questioning. But it looks like they've done a hell of a job. And edge rusher, very important. Man. Never. Edge rushers, those guys go high in the draft. Well, I guess everybody can go high in the draft, but those are that's a specialty item there. That's what's known as a specialty item. But the Indiana's recent surge continues as Kurt Cignetti, man, that Hugan's pledge to Kurt Cignetti and the Hoosiers came just hours after he decommitted from Louisville, where he had been committed since only March 22nd. His commitment also follows a weekend visit to Indiana. Don't want to get too excited. Sounds like he makes some quick decisions too. So let that stuff play out because there's still time to be had. Hey, let's see. I'll go ahead and take I think I'll go ahead and wait. What the heck? I'll bring him in, and I will take a break after that, Coach. Hey, Nick Costco from On3 will be joining us as well today. Looking forward to talking to him, one of the national writers for On3. But I was just talking about this huge flip that Indiana just got. I mean, this is big news here, man. This is not some two-star kid from Indiana somewhere.
No. And
not that there's anything wrong with two-star kids from Indiana.
That's right. I'm getting ready to, after I'm done with here, I'm going to do my video breakdown of the young man. And Indiana right now is racking them and stacking them here the month of June. I think I believe is it they're at 14 now. Is that correct? 14 total. I think they're 14. So. 14 total. I've lost count because they've had so many this week.
You and me both. I think I got to 12, and it's I'm like, whoa. The thing about these two, these have all been quality to me. They seem to all be quality recruits.
Yeah, the Jaden Williams kid out of Maslin, you know, Maslin, Ohio, is a has been a premier high school football program since the beginning of time in some respects. That I mean, it's got not only a Midwest flavor to it, but also a national flavor to it just because of their storied history in high school football. But Jaden Williams is a ball player. He can run. He can fit up in the hole, does a good job of stepping up, taking on blockers and making plays. Really impressed with his ability. The Cortez Rupert kid, whose video was put up, I think, last night, the wide receiver, very smooth receiver that they got as well. And these kids that that they're bringing in right now are getting our top tier recruits. Now, will they come in and be instant impact? Probably not. They're probably a couple years away in some respects, but I like the McFarland kid, the tight end. I mean, he is a 6'5", 205 right now, but you think after his senior year, you think he's going to be about probably 230, 225, 230. I mean, you're talking about a kid that can run, can catch, also can block at the point of attack. So they get a kid that fits their offense tremendously. So it's been an impressive week so far in the recruiting department.
Yeah, your connection's kind of jumping in and out there.
I thought whether it's me or you, I couldn't remember. Just,
is it me?
I'll reset me? When you go to break.
I'm kidding. I was doing the old Saturday Night Live. Is it me? Is it me? It's you. It's you. Him. Right. But yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and hit the break as Nick Costco should be joining us.
I'll reset
here in a little bit. So look forward to talking to Nick. You know what? I'm wrong. Nick's not joining us now, but I'm gonna take a break anyway, and you go to it. All right. We'll be back with more from the Hard Truth. I'm losing my mind. Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Coach Griff with us, back with more. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Thursday. Coach Griff is the wizard now, but we'll be talking about the Pacers today, too, as Bob Kravitz will join us. And Tristan Airey, fresh off of calling that great win by Indiana over Oklahoma City. Pacers up 2-1 in the NBA Finals now. They've got a home game. Last night was so important. They had to get that win because if they lose that game, the series is over. Now, they can put the series on its ear if they can get one more home win and go up 3-1 with a home game to come back to. Man, the Indiana Pacers can put themselves in position of the potential of winning an NBA championship. Man, did anybody ever think they'd say that? Yes, Justin, I agree. TJ McConnell's, oh, no, sorry, he's talking about his sister. That is a smoke show. I did not see that. So I'm not agreeing to that. I didn't see it. I didn't say anything. I saw nothing. Just kidding. I thought he was talking about TJ McConnell because of how incredible he is when he comes in. Man, he's like the Energizer Bunny. He's lights the fire. He gets it going. There you go. Laurie getting equal opportunity. Says TJ ain't so bad either. But Coach Griff with us on the dais. Hope everyone's day is going well. But yeah, Indiana's recruiting right now in Fuego as they are on fire, brother. We were just talking about Kevontae Hugan. He's a 4-star edge rusher out of Booker High School in Florida. Rated a top 400 player in the class of 2026 by the On3 Industry ranking. He's 6'3", 235-pounder. Man, that's something nice to start with. Ranked as the number 41 overall edge rusher in the country in his class. So Yeah, his, like I said earlier, his pledge to Kurt Cignetti came just hours after he decommitted to Louisville. So great sign for Kurt Cignetti. And Brian Haynes, as man, as don't worry about defense. They're still rolling.
Yeah, you can tell it's a year for the defense in the terms of the foundation aspect of things. And I think out of the 14 commits, there's got to be at least 7 or 8 that are on the defensive side of the ball. So they've done a good job of identifying what they want. This young man, after a visit this past weekend, decided to decommit and commit to Indiana. And like you said, it's not over. I mean, Louisville's not going to play dead. You know, they're going to still try to come back and get him. But again, it goes back to what a school can offer a kid in terms of a package. And this is the whole thing that I did on, I think it was Sunday night with Dylan Sin with this settlement. You know, not every college is going to go full bore to the 20.5 million, you know, top of the mountain distribution on this money. I mean, that's the maximum. You know, some, you know, ACC and Big 12 may not be able to go that high, you know, in terms of their distribution. So the Big 10 and the SEC by far are probably going to be the top dogs when it comes to maxing out what they're able to pay a kid from the TV rights deal in distribution. And then on top of that, being able to utilize the NIL funnel as well. But this is going to play a big part moving forward with recruiting on what can or can't be offered to a recruit. And you're going to start seeing schools like Indiana and some of these other Big Ten schools are going to have opportunities to flip kids based upon dollars and cents.
Yeah, no doubt about that. But it's also, there still has to be an element of providing them, you know, a place to grow, a place to build their game, and a place to win, where they can win.
Yes.
They want a shot at playing. Everybody wants to play in the college football playoff. And if not, they want to be playing in a high-profile bowl game. And that's one thing that I think it's lost a little bit is in the NIL has kept guys around for bowl games. Not mm-hmm. just CFP, but for bowl games now. And it should be that should be made a part of every NIL deal in football. You stay until the team is done.
Right.
Not until you're done. Not until you decide it's over. It's not over until we decide it's over.
Well, and
was it no over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor?
That's right. Great quote. But you're right. With everything, there should be some form of stipulations, whether it's in the distribution of the TV right package deals that goes to the kids that are going to be paid out, or NIL money that stipulates something that your contract goes from A to B, and anything before that will cost you X. And it should, in a lot of ways, help keep a major portion of those individuals around and through the end of the season, college football playoffs or bowl season. So I'm glad we've got a foundation now that we can at least understand the parameters a little bit better. There's still a lot of black and white that really needs to be flushed out in all this, which I'm hoping at some point, whether it's the College Football Commission that's now established, provides, you know, the guardrails and the idea, you know, the avenue for all this. Because right now, the NCAA is basically no longer the governing body of power P4 football because of this new settlement. They are no longer involved with it. So it should be getting more and more as we get closer to the year, some identity in terms of the rules, the regulations, and all the things that are going to happen. And, you know, I think it's vitally important. It's a top question. Is a school like Indiana, are you going to go up to the 20.5 million that you're allowed to give for, for max?
Can I answer that question?
Sure.
Well, hell yes, they are. Absolutely. You have to stay competitive.
No question.
You heard Kurt Cignetti at Huber's talking about, you know, if you want to be number one in football, then you've got to be number one in NIL. Or if you want to be, I think he said, if you want to be great in football or good in football,
right,
you've got to be great at NIL. It's closer to, I think, what he said. But yeah. Oh, without question, are they going to? They have no choice. They're in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
They I mean, they're already, if you're already behind if you just go to the 20.5 million.
Well, seriously, that's the hard cap, you know, on that, on everything, the 20.5 from the broadcast rights. But from what I'm understanding is not every P4 institution is going to be capable of doing that. And most of them lie within the Big 12 and the ACC. So there is going to be some up advantages, disadvantages for some that cannot go to the full amount because of the school can't handle it. One of them being Iowa State. They've already stated they can't, or otherwise they're going to run out of money in 2 years because the school will not. It has to come from athletics. But I do think this is going to be an interesting dynamic, especially like with recruiting, because this is where it's going to impact. It's going to impact the recruiting aspect of things. What they can offer kids. So when you talk about the flip of a 4-star, I do think, like you said, they can provide what they need to all around for the environment, the coaching staff, and things of that nature, and then provide an environment where a kid can earn his value and get a Big Ten education at a beautiful institution like Indiana.
A Big Ten education. That's right, man. Absolutely. It's also showing that Indiana, that Kurt Cignetti is going to be able to provide these types of environments to me, for these kinds of guys. But yeah, there's not only will Indiana go to the 20.5 million, 75% of it will go to football.
Right.
And there, I mean, that's not something that has been said, or I've been told. I just fall right back on what I said a minute ago. But you don't have a choice. You have to.
Yeah,
you're in the Big Ten. You don't have a choice. You've got teams like USC, Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State that are already out NILing you. So you have to use every marble in the bag, baby.
And that's going to be the beautiful thing about this, because now you're not going to have that big of discrepancies with the NILs and stuff when it becomes, you know, what the cost and things of that nature are when it surrounds, you know, the NIL with Deloitte and how that all works and things of that magnitude. So there will be some level playing fields being instituted here in the next, you know, 1 to 4, 5 years as we go along. But overall, the way we understood college football, the college football that I coached in, played in, is no longer that. It's July 1. It's a completely different beast. But you're right. As far as what coaches can bring to the table, I tell you, Brian Haynes is the best seller of anything that a defensive player can look at. He can go in and show them exactly how he wants to use them, how they're going to be. And he's got the background and the proof of what they've done over the last few years and taking a kid and making him a draft pick in a year. CJ West. I mean, that's a prime example of a kid coming in from Kent State, 1 year in the program, becoming a dominant defensive lineman in the Big Ten and automatically going into the NFL and being drafted. And that speaks volumes to kids that they're recruiting and what they want to hear. And Bryant Haynes is a really good seller when it comes to recruiting because he's relatable and he immediately strikes a connection with a kid.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it will or will not, but it might have a factor in to keeping coordinators around as the recruiting continues to rise and they get more to work with. Now, on the other side of that coin, they're getting more to work with. Their star is going to shine more and more because they're already doing what they're doing with what they came in with what they built on, and what they continue to build.
No question. And I don't think you're going to see guys jumping ship as much as we once did from a middle of the pack Big Ten team to, you know, whether it's the upper echelon of the Big Ten or going to the ACC or whatever. Number one, like Coach Cignetti was able to accomplish, is they got the commitment and he's got a purse of money that he can immediately match if he so chooses whatever an institution is trying to poach from an assistant coach off of his staff, or as in they showed this past summer with the strength and conditioning coach. And that in itself gives you the idea that Indiana is serious about becoming a big time football Big Ten program A to Z. And whether it's coaching staff, whether it's the head coach, whether it's the administrative staff as strength and conditioning, nutrition, you name it, they're gonna learn to pay the top dollar for the talent that they want to keep involved in the program. Now, not everybody's gonna, you know, he's not gonna be able to do that with everybody, but he's gonna be able to do it, you know, 90% of the personnel that's in that building from day one, and that's being established now. But this coaching staff as recruiters, take the money out of it. Let's take all the money out of it. You're seeing why they're good. You're seeing why kids relate to them. Shanahan, Haynes. I can go right down the list. Bobstead. These guys do a very good job in recruiting because they're relatable. Kids relate to them. They're able to articulate how they're going to utilize the talent of that kid and how he fits into the program. And when the kid comes on campus, Coach Cignetti is already reinforcing what that coordinator, what that position coach has already told the kid. And we've talked about this before. A kid and a parent get on a campus at like Bloomington, right? And whether they come a day before and get a chance to get settled around it, it sells itself. Bloomington sells itself. And that is the beauty of having a top tier campus like Indiana, academically, socially. And when a kid gets into seeing Coach Cignetti and the staff, it's, you know, icing on the cake for them. They've done a hell of a job, and take the money out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're doing a good job of doing all of that and more. Man, recruiting successes continue on for Indiana football. I'm going to have you join us again later, since Nick is actually joining us
at the top of the
next hour. So you can just join us at then again when he comes on, so we can
at 10.
Yes, at the top of the hour.
Okay.
We'll have you back, brother. Look forward to it.
I'm not used to that TV talk, top of the hour.
It's actually radio talk, but
okay, buddy. Radio TV.
We're back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Speaking of drinking and driving, don't drink and drive. Bob Kravitz on a golf course. I've seen it done, but I would never recommend it to anybody. Bob Kravitz joining us now, all in red. Are you doing Santa Claus early?
I don't think so. No, I'm. I've been in a sick bed for about a week, so I've been a little under the weather, so I'm just kind of hanging out.
Well, I'm glad to hear you're getting better. I know that you got hit with the strep throat and things of that, like that, man, but I hope you are feeling better. That is no fun.
No. We got our first NBA Finals here in 25 years, and I'm stuck in bed, so... Yeah, I didn't go to the game. There's already a couple of Pacers who are under the weather. I didn't want to be patient zero and be responsible for their decline.
Well, that's very, very kind of you, sir. And it worked. It worked because they won again, they win game three. They are up 2-1. Last night was what I called a must win, or or the series was over. Now, the series is not won, but they can put themselves in a fine position. If they can get one more home win and go up 3-1 with a home game coming.
This is the one, man. This is the one. To me, whoever wins game four is going to win this series. And it's going to be a hell of a challenge. I mean, they played a fabulous game last night. You know, Oklahoma City is their real deal. This is a completely different kind of beast from the one they've been playing throughout the Eastern Conference playoffs. And I thought TJ changed the energy in the building. I thought that Mathurin was phenomenal. Halliburton was really good. Siakam, really good. I mean, they got – this is the team they've been all year. They go 8-9 deep, and they, you know, even 10 deep, and they get contributions from everybody.
You mean like TJ McConnell? Does he contribute anything?
Good Lord. He is something else, man. He is Halliburton calls him the great white hope. He's the kind of basketball player who, you know, you remember the kid who was like the wrestler in your gym class, and he would play basketball and he'd be up in your face the whole time, and you're like, Get out of my face. He's just a gnat, man. He's
just I was just going to use that very term. You just cannot get rid of him last night. I mean, Cheryl four says steals. He broke. What is that, a record?
What's that?
Cheryl Sizemore saying that TJ broke a record, and I don't know what record he broke, but
yeah, I don't either.
I'm sure we'll be finding out. But just seeing him, he provides a spark. I mean, he comes in and it's like zip, zip, zip. It's like sparks are literally flying off of what he's doing. And it energizes not only the guys that are on the floor, but the guys that are on the bench that he's come in and he and others have come in to relieve.
Oh, yeah. He's, you know, it's funny. If you go back to 2011 when Carlisle won with the Mavericks, if you remember, he put J.J. Barea in that series. He started him. And Barea, who was kind of like the Puerto Rican TJ, version of TJ, he changed that entire series. And see, I really felt like there's going to be one game that the bench was going to win. I think there's going to be one game that Carlisle is going to win with his smarts. It's remarkable. They really have no right to be up 2-1 in this series, but they are. And bless their souls, man. They may just bring a championship to Indianapolis.
It's very possible, because I guarantee you very few people had them up 2-1 right now. As a matter of fact, I would imagine that most would have had them down 2-1 right now at best.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you look at that first game in OKC, they were dominated for, what, 3.5 quarters, and just, you know, made that epic comeback, which they have a habit of doing. But, you know, I mean, that the first two games, they led by a total of, like, what, 1:55 or something like that. They're just an incredibly resilient, tough-minded group, and they do it. They do it day after day after day.
Well, and we've talked about this ad nauseum on each game. You don't know who it's going to be. I mean, is it going to be Pascal Siakam? Is it going to be Tyrese Halliburton? Is it going to be Miles Turner? We just go down the line. Thomas Bryant with his contributions, but courtesy of Cheryl Sizemore. She sent me the post that said TJ McConnell just made history, NBA Finals history, in only 15 minutes. The Indiana Pacers' ultimate spark plug became the first bench player ever to post 10 plus points, 5+ assists, and 5+ steals in a finals game, stuffing the stat sheet in just 15 minutes to fuel Indiana's game three win.
There's a stat for everything, isn't there? That's a good stat, but there's a stat for everything.
Yeah, there's no lies about that. There's stats about stats.
There's stats about stats. No, but that he was remarkable last night, and that's just what they needed because they came out slow. Holmgren was getting to his spots. Jalen Williams was having a game, SGA. But they hung in there, and McConnell was Matt Marvelous. And Mathurin, Mathurin is never going to fit perfectly into what the Pacers want to do. But as a bench player, as a primary scorer off the bench, he's very effective. And you kind of knew there'd be that one game where Mathurin was going to be a difference maker. That game was last night.
And I didn't even mention him. I mean, when I was going down the list, I mean, there's so many easily to leave one out, but not him as the
27 points. That's all.
Off the bench. Add that to what TJ McConnell did. I mean, it's.
And Obi Toppin.
Yeah. Oklahoma City, if Indiana wins this next game and they're down 3-1, well, just going in down 2-1, they have beat the crap out of people all year long. They're not used to having their backs against the wall.
Well, they were in this position exactly against the Denver Nuggets in the second round of the Western Conference playoffs. They lost the first game on a heartbreaker, just the way they did to the Pacers. They won the second game. They lost game three in Denver. So they were down 2-1 in that series, and they stormed back and they won it by 7 in 7 games. So Oklahoma City has been in this position before, and I would suspect that they're going to play their best game on Friday.
Yeah, they have to. They have to bring it. It's all on the line. This is not, doesn't wrap the series up, but it starts to put the wrapping paper on it. Right. And, and this Pacer team, I just talked about Oklahoma City not accustomed to having to play with their backs to the wall. That's all the Pacers have done all year.
Right.
The Pacers have just done this. They've done it throughout these series, not having their backs against the wall so much, but in games they have on the road. And so they have played in these tough environments. And so I don't know and they've got a little bit more experience. I don't want to say lack of experience because they've ran roughshod through everybody virtually in the NBA this year, but the Oklahoma City Thunder are the second youngest team in the NBA.
Right.
And, to win a finals with that would be an amazing thing to accomplish. I don't know. Is that playing a role, do you think?
I don't. I just think the Pacers have played. I mean, they played really well last night. They got that miracle win in game one. No, I just think they're up against a team that's almost their equal. Now, if you're asking me what's going to happen, I think SGA is going to go off on Friday. I think they're going to tie. I felt all along this is going to be 2-2 heading back to Oklahoma City. I hope it's not. I'd love to see the Pacers take a 3-1 lead. But like I say, I think game four is the series. I think whoever wins that is going to take the series.
I agree with you. And if the Pacers were not to win that game, you talk about the pressure turning around because now you're looking at two games in Oklahoma City coming up with one remaining in Indianapolis. They're going to have to put their best defense on, man, and shine it up. Who's going to get the job of shutting down SGA?
Well, it's going to be largely Nembhard. They throw a lot of bodies at him now. I mean, they're throwing Nesmith at him. They're throwing Shepherd at him every once in a while. You see Halliburton. So they're throwing a lot of bodies at him. But for the most part, it's Andrew Nembhard who did an absolutely fabulous job in game one, did an even better job against Jalen Brunson in game six of the Knicks series. So, look, you're not going to stop the guy. He had an off night last night. He only had 24. But, you know, when the guy's averaging 35 a game, you'll take that anytime you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And so now the Pacers go into this next game with the I don't want to say they don't really have pressure on them because they're playing with house money, but as far as actually winning the NBA championship, the pressure is on them because, as you've said, and I agree with you, that this game four, this is the linchpin game, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. Everybody keeps saying they're playing with house money, and I guess based on public expectations, they are, but they're really not. I mean, you know, when you get to this point, you deserve to be there. You know, there's no feisty underdogs left. But yeah, I mean, the way most of the country looks at this is kind of a mismatch. Yeah, they are the feisty underdogs, but I think they feel every bit as much pressure as Oklahoma City does in this scenario.
You want to talk stats? I got a stat for you.
Give me a stat, Jim.
Teams that win game three of a 1-1 NBA Finals.
80.5%.
Bingo. Have gone on to win 80% of those series.
Yeah.
That's good on the Pacers side.
Of course it is. Of course it is. It's meaningless, but it's interesting. I just think the series is going to go six or seven though. If I was a betting man, I'd be pretty bullish on OKC in game four, but we'll see. I mean, OKC has got crazy talent, man. I mean, that Jalen Williams is a hell of a player. Chet Holmgren, when he gets his legs under him, he only played, he missed a lot of games this year with an injury, but they're going to be really good for a really long time.
Yes, they are, because they are the second youngest team, as we talked about. So that's something else. This is a team that could, that the teams have to deal with for the next couple of years.
Oh yeah. They got first round draft picks out the yin yang, and they're going to be able to, use those guys to even strengthen their team. None of their star players are going anywhere. They're all on their first contracts, pretty much. So, they're going to have some staying power. But I think the Pacers will too. Pacers are still, except for Siakam and TJ, still a relatively young team.
Yeah, the Pacers are, well, I wonder where they are in the pantheon of youth in the NBA, because
they're one of the younger teams. I did look it up. I don't remember exactly what I found. I mean, certainly not the second youngest team ever to reach the NBA Finals, as are the Oklahoma City Thunder. But they are one of the younger teams to make it to the Finals. So, you know, the Pacers got some staying power too now.
What else besides staying out, trying to stay out of the sick bed, have you been up to?
Well, I'm going to try to go to practice today with wearing a mask, and I'll cover the rest of the series. I took the night off because I wasn't feeling well, so we'll get back in the middle of the series.
So what is your prediction for the finals from this stamp from right now? If you had to pick,
I'm sticking with what I had initially, which is Oklahoma City in six. I obviously hope that I'm wrong. I would love, you know, for this city to celebrate a championship. I'd love to see a parade down Meridian. I think that would be great. But I think if you're asking me to be objective, and I think you are, I think Oklahoma City is the better team, and they're going to win this thing in six.
How did two small market teams, franchises like Oklahoma City and the Indiana Pacers put together the talent that would make it to the NBA Finals over all else?
Well, for Oklahoma City, they tanked. They went completely in the tank, and they had a bunch of high draft picks, and they made some great trades. You know, they traded for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. You know, they drafted Jalen Williams. They drafted Chet Holmgren. The Pacers, 99% of it was just Kevin Pritchard trades. You know, getting Siakam, getting Halliburton, getting Nesmith. Of course, they drafted Nembhard, drafted Miles many years ago. But this has been great for the NBA. I know the ratings stink, and that's too bad. You know, people say they want to see great basketball. The truth of the matter is people want to see superstars. And neither one of the – I mean, SGA is a superstar, but he's not up there with LeBron and Steph Curry and all those kind of guys yet. But, yeah, the two teams have done it in somewhat similar ways. They both got bad, then they got good, and they've utilized a really smart decision-making from their front offices.
People do want to see superstars, Bob. That's why we have you on.
Well, there you go. You're the best.
Golf plans anytime soon?
No, I had to cancel a couple of tee times along the way because not feeling so good. Yeah, when like my wife said, when you're blown off golf, you definitely don't feel good.
Yeah, that's a fact, man. Well, hopefully you can get back out there soon. I'm sure the Prairie View is missing you.
I'm sure all the guys I owe money to are missing me.
Were you in Oklahoma City when you weren't feeling well, by the way?
Yeah, I was in Oklahoma City, yeah.
Oh, man, that had to make it even rougher.
It was a brutal trip. Not to complain, but I will. It was a brutal trip because I felt so under the weather the whole time. But I wore a mask, so.
Well, I guess that means you didn't get any Whataburger. I talk about Whataburger to everybody who comes in here that's going to
Oklahoma City. No, I've done Whataburger many times. But no Whataburger this time.
You know, they have that spicy ketchup that I love. So I've found other outlets for that. So I'm a happy man again. So there that is, man. Well, when's your next piece coming out?
Probably tomorrow, I would guess. Yeah, tomorrow or Friday. Depends on whether I get my sorry behind up and go to practice today.
Make sure you're checking that out at bobkravitz.com. He's the man. Appreciate you, my friend.
Thank you, buddy.
You betcha. We've got more coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios, including Kristen Airy, who got to call the second quarter of the NBA Finals last night. Back with that and more on the other side. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Thursday. Glad to have you along and glad to have Kristen Airy joining us, fresh off of calling his first NBA Finals ever in second quarter of last night's game. What a cool deal that was. I saw the post that Mark Boyle put out that the Pacers and Mark were asked you to come sit in to call some action, man. That had to be pretty fun and pretty cool.
It was first radio game I had done in 10 years. The last radio play-by-play I did, other than the race, the Indianapolis 500, was 2015. I did game 5 of the WNBA Finals, Fever and the Lynx in Minneapolis. So it was a thrill. I just can't thank Mark enough for reaching out and offering that opportunity. It was great. Sort of, it's like riding a bike, right? Television, as we know, is much different than radio, but I felt really good doing it. And the Pacers had a great quarter. They scored 40 and had the halftime lead. So it was a great opportunity to experience the NBA Finals as an actual broadcaster instead of watching as a fan.
Knowing that you were going to do that, what was the preparation different?
Not really. I mean, you know, I had not prepped for a game since game five of the Milwaukee series. So as I told my wife when I got the opportunity, hey, I need to sit down and do some prep. And I did my charts very similar as if I was doing a whole game. And then I sat up there with Mark and Eddie in the first quarter and kept track of scoring and fouls just like I always would, so that when I got to the second quarter as a broadcaster, it was sort of seamless. In my head, I had done the first quarter, but of course I actually had not. So, I think, you know, from a radio standpoint, you just have to know you got to paint the picture. People can't see the video. You've got to be more descriptive and, really not leave a lot of dead air. From a television standpoint, Jim, I've always said it can be difficult because you're trying to figure out, am I talking too much or am I not talking enough? And so from a television standpoint, that's sort of how you operate. But from a radio standpoint, you need to be descriptive and describing exactly what's happening where on the floor. And I felt really good about that. I mean, I'll listen to myself and give myself my own critique, but I felt pretty comfortable doing it last night.
I'm sure it was flawless and seamless. No question about that. How much fun was it doing that?
Oh, it was a lot of fun. I mean, just to be back engaged in the atmosphere. I mean, Jim, the atmosphere was, I've never felt that at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. And, you know, I felt some pretty good regular season games and some early round playoff games. But I mean, last night, just driving downtown, walking around, JMV hosts a local radio show here in Indianapolis. I was on with him. He had a 5-hour pregame from 3 to 8. I walked across the street to the pub. It was packed full of Pacers fans. Just the energy in the city right now, it's just hard to describe. And for the Pacers to get the win last night, go up 2-1, was huge.
Yes, it was, because I was talking with Bob earlier that last night I talked about it being a must-win game. Now game four is the linchpin game. Bob thinks that whoever wins this game wins the series. I think that if the Pacers don't win this game, they don't win the series. So I guess that's saying the same thing. But you can enjoy it for, like they say, 24 hours, and then you got to let this go because you got another game coming now in 2 more days.
Yeah, it's the only time in the series that there's only one day off between games. Every other time, there's multiple days off between.
Oh, I didn't realize it.
Yeah. So game five is Monday after game four, of course, tomorrow. And then game six, if necessary, is a week from today, Thursday. And then game seven is on June 22nd. So it's the only time in the series where it's a short rest period. And hopefully that plays into the favor of the Pacers because they're the home team. I did think that Oklahoma City late looked a little bit gassed. I thought the Pacers did a really good job of running them throughout the game. I thought Rick Carlisle, the way he utilized his bench, was very good. I mean, Obi Toppin, TJ McConnell, Benedict Mather, all stellar performances last night off the bench. Ben Shepherd, in the short time he was out there, I thought played well. So I thought that was really impactful, what the bench did. They outscored Oklahoma City's bench by a large margin. And if you think back to game two, it was Oklahoma City's bench with Alex Caruso and Aaron Wiggins that put up some big numbers. So the Pacers were able to counter that with their own strong play off the bench last night.
Yeah, and I was just thinking of that, not knowing that there was going to be just one day between games. That should play into the Pacers' hands. You mentioned that Oklahoma City may have looked gassed. Well, this should add to that because their legs don't get that rest that they're probably going to need, and this should be something the Pacers have to take advantage of because this is all season long you've been going since January, and you've been running people to death. Now you can run them into the hole. So this is an opportunity.
Yeah, I think the one thing, too, is if you look at Indiana's 2 wins, Jim, what's been most impressive is they've had to rally in the fourth quarter to get those wins. And Oklahoma City was one of the best teams in the NBA when it came to leading games at the fourth quarter. in the regular season, Jim, they were 61-2 when they led after three quarters. The Pacers in the playoffs have beaten them twice when trailing after three quarters. So I think that says a lot about Indiana, what we've seen during this playoff run. They're now 9-1 in clutch games. And we've defined clutch as plus or minus 5 points with 5 minutes to play. The Pacers 9-1, and I think they've won 18 of their last 20 games in clutch. So that's been a great strength for this team, and we saw it again last night.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we also saw is something that has been the backbone of this team throughout the playoffs, the bench. And not just one guy. Benedict Mathurin obviously had the best night, but I talked earlier about T.J. McConnell. Man, just doing T.J. McConnell things, that assist that he had, the wraparound pass, yeah. And then he immediately steals the ball. Those things, that's what Oklahoma City has been doing to people. And they kind of did that to Indiana in the game before. But man, I don't want to use the word team of destiny yet. I hate using that phrase right now, but man, you kind of don't want to, even from the outside, it's hard not to get excited for the Pacers because they've never been this close to this. Right. I mean, this
there. Yeah, 25 years ago, they lost the first two games to the Lakers, won game three, lost game four in overtime. We're down 3-1. Back then, it was a 2-3-2. Two games in L.A., 3 games in Indiana, 2 games in L.A. And they won game five and went back to Los Angeles down 3-2, and the Lakers won game six. So this is a situation where Indiana has the series lead, can really put a lot of hurt on Oklahoma City with a win tomorrow night. Then you're up 3-1, and you only need to win one more game, and you have one game left at home. So, yeah, tomorrow night, as much as last night was a must-win for the Pacers, you're right. You look at tomorrow night as a must-win for the Pacers. That way you're up 3-1, just as you were, in the Cleveland series. You were up 3-1, were able to win game five in Cleveland. Tomorrow night's a huge game. Last night was one of the biggest games that we've seen at Gainbridge Fieldhouse in 25 years. Tomorrow night will be, I think, the biggest in the history of this franchise.
And tomorrow is just going a Friday night downtown. What the hell do you think Indianapolis is going to be like tomorrow all day? Nobody's from lunch on. It's just going to be a madhouse.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be much work done tomorrow. There's no question about that. 8:30 start gives a lot of people a chance wherever they're going to be. Jim, the great thing about downtown was it wasn't just the almost 18,000 that were going into the building. There was another couple thousand people out on Bicentennial Unity Plaza. And then you think of all the bars and restaurants downtown, and then just go out into the outlying suburbs in Westfield and Carmel and Brownsburg and Greenwood. You know, I've seen video down by where you are in Bloomington. I mean, the sports bars that are down there are packed full of Pacers fans. So it's a phenomenal time. You know, I was telling somebody that, you know, the regular season ended on April 13th. Tomorrow is June 13th. That's 2 months of additional basketball that we've had to celebrate the Indiana Pacers. And it's been a special, special time.
Yeah. And you know what I credit it to? Murray State.
Racers and Pacers.
Continuing the Racers and the Pacers theme, baby. And so hopefully that they stay in the College World Series long enough for the Indiana Pacers to wrap this thing up. But can you imagine this city if Indiana Pacers win an NBA championship? You can't put the cart before the horse and all that, I know, but you're allowed to dream. You're allowed to think about it. Just thinking how cool that would be to have, because Indianapolis is, while it's a big city, it's not a large city. It's not Houston. It's not Philadelphia, right. A city like that. And the same for Oklahoma City, probably more so for Oklahoma City. Is Indianapolis bigger than Oklahoma City?
Yeah. I mean, Indianapolis is like market size 25 and Oklahoma City's 47. So, yeah, these are, if you look at a head-to-head situation, what I was told is it's the matchup of the two smallest markets in NBA history since like 1955 when the Fort Wayne Pistons played Syracuse. That was Fort Wayne and Syracuse back in 55. So that's almost, that's 70 years ago. And so we've never seen anything like this. I think it's fantastic to see these two organizations who just 3 years ago, each won 20 plus games. They've rebuilt around young stars, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for Oklahoma City, Tyrese Halliburton for the Pacers, and they play a fun style of basketball to watch. I mean, Jim, if you didn't have a horse in the race last night and you just were sitting at home watching last night's game, it was a terrific basketball game. And I expect we'll see more of those the rest of the series.
Well, every game, that's what the Pacers have done. They've made every game exciting, some of them too exciting for their fans' benefits. But that's what they have done, and I think that also gives them an edge, having played in so many of these games in these playoffs, not during the season, in these playoffs against upper, higher-seeded teams. So they've been the underdog throughout, except for the Milwaukee series, three straight series where they are the decided underdog. They were a decided underdog to Cleveland. They were still an underdog to New York. I wouldn't call it a decided underdog, but they are definitely were a decided underdog going into this series, according to the national pundits. But man, they play the games on the courts, not in Las Vegas, fortunately.
Yeah, and back to that clutch stat, 33 games this year they've won in clutch situations. And you do go all the way back to the regular season when they did it 24 times. I think that set the table for the confidence that they've built, and they don't get rattled in the postseason. And Jim, they've done it not just at Gainbridge Fieldhouse, but they've done it on the road as well. So they have a great belief, and each and every night it is somebody different. And last night it was Benedict Mathurin rising to the occasion off the bench with a 27-point performance. I think it was critical that Siakam and Halliburton had 20-point games. That was big as well. And we'll see, you know, who is the person that makes the difference tomorrow night. It could be Aaron Nesmith. It could be Thomas Bryant, as we saw in Game 6 of that New York series. So that's the beauty about this team that and I think makes it tough on other teams is that you don't know who's going to step up and maybe be the person that's going to be alongside Tyrese Halliburton and Pascal Siakam on any particular night.
Absolutely. Getting a little bit off topic, the New York Knicks, have they reached out to you in regards to their potential head coaching job?
I think what they keep reaching out and they're turned down by each and every franchise. I just realized in the last few hours that they reached out to Billy Donovan at Chicago. And of course they
shut that's them. Five then.
Yeah.
I think that makes it five. That's almost unprecedented to go that deep into your wish list and to be rejected. Five people that have either didn't want to talk to them or the clubs have franchises have said, no, thank you. But why would a franchise let you talk to their sitting coach? Who the hell would do that?
But what's interesting, Jim, is, you know, here's what's funny is though this happens all the time in college sports, right? Because college coaches have buyouts. And in these NBA coaches, I don't think there are buyouts. They have contracts. Now they could negotiate. But if you're Houston and you have Ime Udoka, you've got an up and coming young team like Oklahoma City. You don't want to let him go. Billy Donovan is in Chicago. I mean, he's got some New York ties. He was he played in New York. He was an assistant coach. I think was he an assistant coach at one point to Rick Pitino? It'll be interesting to see. But you wonder, when New York made this decision to let Tom Thibodeau go, what was their backup plan? It doesn't appear that they had a backup plan.
What was their plan? period. Then you get to the backup plan. Chris Stanieri, the TV voice of the Indiana Pacers, with a little radio thrown in on the side. Appreciate you, my friend. Hopefully when we're talking next week.
Yeah.
See, the final.
Yeah, next Thursday. I mean, there could be a potential game six next Thursday on the 19th.
So we have one day off, and then we get a damn week off.
Well, one day off. No, then game five is Monday. Game five is Monday in Oklahoma City. And then game six would be Thursday at Gainbridge Fieldhouse if needed.
We're ready for it.
All right. We'll talk to you next week.
Appreciate you. Chris Stanieri joining us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Back with more on the other side. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. And Coach Griff rejoins us. And we're joined by our friend Nick Costco from On Three. How are you, sir?
Good, boys. Appreciate you having me on today.
Man, I appreciate you taking the time to join us. Looking forward to another fun and exciting college football season, period. Not just a Big Ten season, but last year when we were going through all of toward the end of the year, just I kept talking about how fun that season had been. As a fan, if I could just enjoy it as a fan, I'm like, damn, that was fun. The games, there's teams that have risen. Indiana, one of those, but Illinois, again, will be two of those in the mix again this year. Don't know what Iowa's going to be like, but outside of that, I know that there are other teams that are going to be doing that. But I wonder, is that going to be offset now by the house case settlement with, you know, there's still going to be separation between the haves and the have-nots?
You probably still are going to have that for a little while. I mean, when you look at the house settlement, you're probably waiting for, all right, how is this going to even out? How's it going to, I guess, rectify itself over the next couple of years? Because, you know, you still have coaches or ex-coaches like Mack Brown who said the other day, you know, I still want a salary cap. You know, there should be a cap on how much you could spend on, you know, younger players. You know, it should be like a scaled system. So, there's a lot of nuance to this conversation, but I think because at least off the bat, it seems like I would imagine a lot of the big programs, at least the Power Four institutions, are going to put their resources into the football program if they're not a basketball school, of course, and they'll be on an even playing field, so to speak, with the amount of money that they have at their disposal, at least from the house settlement. But the problem is there's still no cap on what these outside collectives and these other donors can do as well. So in the case of, you know, obviously when you're talking about an Indiana versus, let's say, an Ohio State or an Oregon, I could just say without even knowing any numbers that a school like Ohio State or Oregon will have more outside money from donors, collectives, whatever the case may be, compared to an Indiana. Now, I'm not saying that can't change, but I think until that is rectified or maybe that there's other rules in place, you're still going to have the quote unquote have not, you know, the haves and the have nots compared to, you know, maybe it'll slow down a little bit, but with the amount of money that schools can now spend and pay their players directly. But I think the presence of outside collectives in terms of the NIL space, where there's really no rules or cap on that still to this day, that'll still be a looming factor for the big programs as they look to outspend, you know, even the mid tier Power Four programs.
Coach?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the NIL, I'm interested to see how this Deloitte group, you know, clearance house, however you want to call it, established.
I wonder when, since they're involved, is every time that a deal's gone through, do they bring it out in an envelope? And the deal is.
That'd be great because we get to know what the deal is. But, how they're going to establish this value, whether it's legit, whether it's not legit, to say that a running back's worth is X versus a running back at so-and-so. I'm interested to see how this is. I saw an article that said the biggest people that would have been racked up for the NIL were those that were particularly in, you know, closest to the school, you know, in that regard. So, have you heard anything on that as it pertains to establishing levels or, you know, how they're going to do that?
haven't heard directly, but I'm with you. I'm curious on how that this is actually going to work. I believe it's what $600 is the amount, the dollar figure amount. So it's like, I mean, if somebody were paying me NIL money, I'd be lucky to get $10. You know what I mean? So I mean, I don't have to claim that, but it's almost like, hey, you know, this is going to be taxed or something. You know what I mean? So you have to claim it if it's over $600. I'm not really sure where it's going to go with it or how they're actually going to, I guess, establish, you know, whether it's levels or determine someone's value. And that brings up almost a pretty general question of, you know, how do you determine a high school kid's value or a transfer portal kid's value? And I think it's, you know, it goes back to the old expression, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So, you know, one school could value this running back a lot more and pay him a lot more than all of a sudden they're paying him, what is it, let's just say six figures, and all of a sudden they have to, you know, send that and get it basically approved by the clearinghouse or however it's going to work. I think the genesis of it is probably to say, we don't want you guys to throw this money around willy-nilly, or you at least have to be public with what you're doing, because again, you see all these reports of what these kids are getting in football, basketball, even some of the Olympic sports. You know, I cover wrestling very intently, and you know, I've been around college wrestling for over 10 years. Some of these guys are getting big time paydays, but there's a lot of speculation on what they're actually making. It's like, well, you know, these big wrestling programs or big football schools, they're going to throw out, well, we have blank checks. We have these donors that are disposed that can write out blank checks. We don't have to tell anybody what we're spending on it, because they're just going to write it off as, you know, maybe a donation to a charity or something. So I'm not sure where it's going to go exactly. I think it's a step in the right direction to at least make this public. And if college sports is going to go the way of professional sports, we see it all the time with pro athletes. We know their contract numbers, or at least the general numbers of what their contract is worth. And that is all for public consumption. So I think that's the direction we're going. Whether it's a good idea or not for college kids remains to be seen. But I think if you're going to have to go into the direction of pro sports, this is what you have to do.
Well, and we've seen, I'll use Indiana for an example, just because it's easy, that they have been able to put together a competitive team, and they are able to follow that up. And it looks like with the uptick in recruiting, that does not seem to be slowing down. It seems to be continuing to move. Just had a flip today of a kid from Louisville to Indiana, 4-star edge rusher. So it's ironic. There was an event not too long ago, and that the basketball coach has always been the featured speaker. And not only was the football coach the featured speaker this time, beforehand when the media got to meet with both coaches, someone asked Kirk Cignetti about something to do with NIL. I said, well, you know, I'd like to have brought in a few more guys, but Darren had to replace his whole roster and money got a little tight. Just joking. And some people wondered if there was some truth to that scenario, and there just might have been, but Indiana is not, I don't know how they can ever compete like a school like Indiana. Rutgers, I'm not greatly informed on how Rutgers NIL situation is, but I wouldn't think that Indiana nor Rutgers could compete with the Ohio States or the Michigans or the Penn States of the world.
No, not necessarily. And I think it's going to take somebody who's going to be very generous. You know what I mean? So if there's a rich guy out there a rich woman who wants to say, you know what, I have more money than I ever would ever know what to do with, and I want to start investing into these schools' athletic programs because I happen to go here or my kid goes here, that's one thing. But I think for schools like that, you need to get lucky because you don't have the built-in brand like an Ohio State, a Penn State, a Michigan. You know, those schools have more money than they know what to do with at this point, because it seems like there's an endless supply to the donor base because they have a large alumni base. And frankly, they're just richer schools. They don't have this long storied tradition. You look at Indiana last year, best season in program history when it comes to the football. And then all of a sudden you're like, okay, now there's expectations, but oh yeah, we need to start catching up to the Michigans, Ohio States, Oregon's, Penn States, because they have all this money within the Big Ten. And you're looking at, I guess, the way the Big Ten allocates money. Rutgers was waiting on their full share from the Big Ten, from getting into the Big Ten over 10 years ago for a long time, just using it as an example. And just going back to the point about the House settlement and the amount of money that these schools are going to be able to allocate from the nearly $3 billion that the House settled on with the NCAA. Yes, schools are mostly going to have, I guess, around the same amount of money to spend, and it's just up to the school themselves to allocate, okay, here's the percentage that's going to the football program, here's what's going to basketball, and then the Olympic sports, hey, you know, start fighting it out for the scraps at this point. I think it's up to the school as far as how much they want to allocate to each, and I think, like I said before, schools like Indiana. I mean, Indiana might be an exception because, they have a good football program now, but obviously a lot of history in basketball. They might divvy it up a little bit differently. But at a school like Rutgers, where you know they had two NBA draft picks on their basketball team just last season, struggled anyway. But again, Rutgers has been a football-dominant school in a school that doesn't have too much great athletic tradition in terms of championships. So you're looking at maybe football gets the bulk of the money because the way that Greg Schiano operates, and then the rest goes to basketball. Then, you know, other sports like wrestling, and I would say, women's basketball a little bit, that they'll get the scraps among the other Olympic sports or non-revenue generating sports. So schools like that to try to catch up, Jim, they're going to probably pour most of their money into football, but to me, they're still going to be behind the eight ball. And then at that point, you just have to hope luck kind of goes your way on the field so you can start turning some heads and maybe obviously raise more money.
Yeah. Here's the question I got, because I think this is, ultimately, I've always been a big believer that the schools that offer an avenue for kids to compete, it serves the whole well-being of the student athlete, you know, giving them an avenue to compete and get a great college education. The thing that I just don't think there's much time left is non-revenue sports. Now, it may be different at each school. You pointed out maybe wrestling at Rutgers is a revenue generating type of sport, mm-hmm. where at school X, it's not, or whatever. Men's and women's track is another example. I just don't see how schools can continue offering a broad based athletic program because of the cost that's going to be associated with this, you know, no more scholarships. So everybody's on a scholarship. So I just don't see it happening. I mean, I hate it, but I just can't see a school being able to support a broad-based athletic program unless you're in Ohio State or a Michigan or someone like that. But you talk about the middle Big Ten schools and lower, whether it be ACC, Big 12, whatever, they're going to have to cut the budget. And unfortunately, it's going to come at the cost of those sports.
Yeah, it's going to be a very hard decision for a lot of athletic directors at these programs where, you know, you mentioned the upper tiers of the Big Ten, the ACC, you know, I'm not too in depth with the ACC, but I can probably assume off the top of my head that a school like, let's just say schools like Miami and Florida State, very rich football programs, they could probably afford to infuse a lot of money into basketball as well. But who knows with those schools as well, what are they going to do with their track programs, their baseball programs, or, you know, their, even some of their women's programs? I think it's an alarming issue. I think that was the biggest argument against the House settlement, because everyone knew where this money was going to go. Yes, you could pay the athletes directly, and yes, that will include the Olympic sports as well, which a lot of, you know, certain schools have, they've been able to, I don't want to say manipulate NIL deals, but other schools that have very rich Olympic programs or Olympic programs that are very successful on and off the field or mat, you know, those types of programs can, I guess, generate more dollars and they're able to afford in the NIL space for these athletes. But yet they're going to have to solely maybe rely on those NIL NIL packages or the donors, because the revenue from the school that's going to be able to be paid back to the athletes, it's going to the big sports. It's going to football and it's going to basketball. So it's kind of the same situation that they were already in, because again, you know, even before all this, guys, we were talking about, hey, you know, here's your revenue generating sports, here's your non-revenue generating sports. And they're kind of just floating there on the athletic department's budget. So I think but they're still going to be, it might accelerate now where it's like, hey, we're pouring all this money into football and basketball. This is the amount of money we're getting, but we have to keep up in the arms race with facilities, paying players, getting kids in the transfer portal if we want a competitive product. And it's going to come at the expense at some of these sports that are, you know, so most of the time it's going to be the sports that are not performing in terms of the wins and loss column, but sometimes it will come at the expense of the programs that are successful. And it's like, hey, sorry, you know, basically it's like, hey, thanks for your service. You know, tough decision right here, but we have to cut you, and, you know, good luck in the future, wherever you may go. I think we're headed down that path, unfortunately. And like you, I do hate it. Schools are going to have to be very, very crafty in order to keep a lot of these programs. And just coming from a wrestling guy, yeah, I'm worried about it. We see wrestling programs basically cut every single season. Some then come back the next year, whether it's a new program or an old program that was cut a few years ago. The example of Cleveland State, where the government had to get involved, you know, to keep Cleveland State wrestling, and they ended up adding a women's program. So who knows where all this goes, but I've seen it firsthand, and we're definitely not slowing down anytime soon.
Last question on this issue, and while we don't have the answer to this question, but it begs another. Robert asks, what will the time frame be for the clearinghouse to make a ruling? Well, we don't know yet, like I said, but my question is, with this being new, there's going to be an instant backlog of all of these that have to go through. Are they prepared, first of all, for this? Because every deal that's over $600 has to go through this. So that means 4 years of student athletes all hit at once.
I have no idea how they're going to get this done, to be honest with you. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think when the initial settlement came out and the ruling, wasn't it what, June 7th or June 9th? It was a couple of days ago where it's like, yeah, here's your deadline to turn in your NIL deals. And I think they just extended that. And it's like, okay, can you imagine as you just mentioned, the backlog of deals that need to go through this clearinghouse now and get approved? It's like, yeah, all right, I make 700, you know, I'm getting $700 for, you know, doing this advertisement on top of, you know, whatever I'm making in terms of basically these kids are making a salary now. But can you just imagine if you were just an Olympic level athlete, an Olympic sport athlete, whether it's, you know, track, baseball, you know, lacrosse, whatever the case may be. And let's say you did an advertisement for one day, you made $700. You now have to get that approved. How long is that going to take on top of, basically half the football team has to get their NIL deals approved. So however long it's going to take, I feel like we're going to be in a situation where, I mean, you guys know how offices work sometimes. Yeah, a backlog of papers. Either we're not going to worry about it. It's like, all right, keep doing what you're doing. It's a free for all. We're not going to worry about it. Or they're just going to go, you know what? Yep, approved. And they're not even going to look at it. I think we're also looking at something like that, because I can't imagine what that office or however the situation looks, where it's like, oh yeah, we have X amount of deals we have to approve. Okay, go ahead, just, you know, pass it on to the next person. I think that's where we're headed as well.
Okay, now we're going to talk some football, man, as Big Ten Media Days, just a month away, 6 weeks away probably, out in Las Vegas. So this season is going to be here quicker before any of us know it, and I'm ready for it. I can't wait. But now I saw ESPN's, they put their list out the other day of projected finish. I'm trying to get it pulled back up, and I can't quite get it. I can't remember if they had Ohio State at the top.
They did. Mm-hmm.
And who do they have followed them?
So we pulled this the other day at On Three, you know, just to kind of analyze ESPN's FPI, which we love doing, of course, because everyone loves arguing about ESPN's FPI. The top five, at least for the Big Ten this year, in terms of the order of finish, with all their percentages to win the Big Ten to go along with their FPI rating this year. Ohio State was number one, so the defending champs are back at the top. Penn State, national championship contender this year, they're number two. And then rounding out the top five are Oregon, Michigan, and then USC, actually, based on these numbers, are actually in the top five. And for your listening audience, Indiana was right there, a little bit above the middle right there at number eight in the Big Ten in terms of the predicted order of finish.
I was surprised to see both Washington and Nebraska picked ahead of Indiana. Illinois is not an argument, because Illinois is a team that is expected to be good. That is going to be a team that, well, we'll find out early, because Indiana and Illinois open up the Big Ten season against each other. But there's no way I could dream of putting Washington in front of Indiana right now, nor Nebraska, to be honest with you. I don't know what they have added that jumps them up this high, because they're still not as good at quarterback as Indiana is, for certain, and maybe a few of those other teams. I just don't not quite following that one.
Yeah, I was a little confused. Again, you go by the FPI metrics, it can get a little wonky. I mean, there was a lot of times last year, guys, where we were, you know, breaking down ESPN's FPI top 25 week to week, and Alabama was still ranked in the top three a lot of those weeks, where, and that's a team that didn't even make the playoff, and of course lost to Vanderbilt and Oklahoma last year. Yeah, I don't know personally why someone would pick Washington and Nebraska over Indiana right now, at least. You mentioned the quarterback. I love Mendoza coming over, transferring in from Cal. I think Cignetti got a really good one right there under center. But I'm looking at Washington right now. I believe their projected starter is Damon Williams. Obviously, they were off of now his name escapes me from last year. But they had a different quarterback last year who was a transfer. And Washington got to a bowl game last year. I'll give Jed Fish some credit, though, getting into the postseason and where he left. I believe he was one of those late hires where he left Arizona and ended up going to Washington. It was based on Kalen DeBoer going to Alabama after Nick Saban's retirement. So if you follow that train of that train of thought right there, Washington, to me, I'm sure Jed Fish is going to do a good job, but I think Indiana's better suited right now, despite basically reloading the offensive line with transfers. But I think Indiana's in a better spot. Nebraska, to me, is the big wild card of the Big Ten, where I love Matt Rhule as a college coach. He's done a great job wherever he's gone, but their success hinges on, okay, can they limit the damage on defense, have that ferocious defense, and is Dylan Raiola going to take that next step at quarterback? Obviously, he started as a true freshman last year, looked really good in spots, also looked like a true freshman last year. Is he going to take that next step and be one of the better quarterbacks in the Big Ten? If he is, I can see the argument for Nebraska to go into the upper half of the Big Ten, if not that upper tier of the Big Ten this year. But until I see it for myself, I would still favor an Indiana over Nebraska and Washington. And frankly, I think ESPN just loves the metrics, at least love USC for some reason. I can't see USC, by the way, at number 5 right now. Maybe I'll be eating my words at the end of the season, but until Lincoln Riley fixes the defense and I guess just pushes the right buttons, but they have decreased in wins each year that he's been there, until they actually show me something where they're maybe racing off to a 6 or 7-0 start, I find it hard to believe USC is going to be top 5 this year too.
Brand bias, coach.
Yeah, brand bias. But Indiana's brand, like we talked before, has changed and gotten a lot better, especially in the high school ranks, of being able to walk in and having that instant recognizable logo on their chest. The thing about Nebraska, I'm interested to see how Holgorsen fits into this whole deal. I was quite surprised that Rhule brought him in at the end of last season and kind of turned over the apple cart in that offensive staff room, and then he became the guy, because it'll be an interesting dynamic. Now, he certainly fits, I guess you would say, Dylan Raiola's style of quarterbacking. But I'm interested to see how that all goes with everything in that regard. But I'm with you. I just don't understand how those two teams, Nebraska and Wisconsin, can be ahead of Indiana in any poll. But again, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, and the black and white, whatever they think the black and white looks like is what they're gonna figure and all that. But I guess the biggest thing with the Big Ten is, do we ever see a quote-unquote a balanced schedule with crossover games where the Big Ten will have an agreement with the SEC that they'll each play one crossover game, vice versa, and all that? Because I know there is that rumbling I'm hearing about that being a part of future scheduling, that you will have to play one school out of whatever conference and in your makeup of your schedule. What are you hearing on that end?
Not until the SEC grows the pair and goes to 9 damn conference games.
I think it's the biggest thing. And I think it's funny because the Big Ten and the SEC have been working together, I think, the best when it comes to the Power Four conferences. They're kind of dictating with the way or where the sport is going to go in the future. I mean, we see it all the time right now over the last couple of months with the playoff. Whether it's going to go to 14 or 16 teams, it's probably going to be 16, to be honest with you. Some people argue that 14 might be low-key better just because of the buys at the top, but they've been working together quite well, Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti. They seem to be guys on the same page, but I'm with you. I think if the SEC and the Big Ten are going to come to some sort of scheduling agreement where you start rotating games where, let's just say, you have Big Ten team and SEC team, they'll play each other this year, and then it just starts rotating down some sort of ladder or however it's going to work, where you don't play the same team year to year, or maybe like a home and home for 2 years. Then every 2 years you switch the SEC opponent. To me, that would be a logical scenario to, I guess, schedule these non-conference games where you're not playing cupcakes. I think those are the matchups people want to see. and it gets all, you know, then every week is obviously must-see TV at that point. But you have to be able to balance it out because the Big Ten plays 9 games in the conference. The SEC is going to not do that right now. If they do that, then I think that's where you'll start seeing, okay, maybe we get some sort of scheduling, you know, not to use the alliance terms. Obviously, that was disastrous a couple of years ago. But I think you'll have some sort of scheduling alliance if the SEC does go to 9 games. But again, that's up in the air. And it seems like the powers that be in the SEC, Greg Sankey, who's the commissioner, he's just like, you know what? We're worrying about ourselves. We'll help out everybody else, kind of, but we're worried about more of the playoff. And I think these the conference commissioners, especially Sankey and Petit, I think they're more worried about, hey, are we going to do automatic qualifiers for the college football playoff? Are we going to have, you know, four auto bids for each of our conferences? Let everybody else fight it out, and then of course we're going to take some at-large bids because we're the Big Ten and we're the SEC. I think that's what the focus is right now. I would love to see a schedule where a Big Ten, you know, maybe it's Big Ten and SEC crossover. Now, in a perfect world, guys, I mean, you don't want to shut out the group of five conferences, but maybe in a perfect world, everyone plays 9 conference games, 12-game schedule, and if you're the Big Ten, your 3 non-conference games are against an ACC, a Big 12, and a SEC opponent. That'd be great, wouldn't it? We can all dream, and I don't think I'm going to see that in my lifetime, to be honest with you.
No, I don't think the SEC would agree to that, first of all.
No.
They don't like to put themselves in any situations where they may not be showing their best,
especially with the bowl eligibility.
Exactly. What's up next for you, man?
I'm just cruising through the summer right now. Obviously, you know, I talk a lot about wrestling, college wrestling. Actually, we are going to provide some coverage at On3 this weekend, Saturday in Newark, New Jersey. It's Final X, so they're doing the best of 3 series in all the world team weight classes to determine Team USA. So you'll see a lot of great college alum, you know, from Iowa, Penn State, Oklahoma State, you name it. I'll see a lot of those guys for men and women this coming weekend. So that'll be really cool to see that event actually for the first time in person for me. I've only ever covered that event from afar. So a quick drive up to North Jersey for me, and then we'll see where it goes from there. But then once that's done, guys, I have to wait. I got to wait for football for college, and obviously high school in our backyard here in South Jersey as well. But it's going to be exciting. It's going to be a good summer, but we all know how it works. Summer's going to fly by. All right. How are we going to fix the football program after week 2? Yeah, that's what we're waiting for.
Indiana not known for its wrestling prowess, but under Angelo Escobedo over the last 5 years, I think now, he has really done an incredible. Hell, they were ranked. And I remember when I first saw it, I was like, "Wait, what?"
I've talked to Coach Escobedo before. He's awesome. They just had Danelle Washington, who I just had on the On3 Wrestling podcast right after the NCAA tournament. All-American this year for the first time in his career, up at 184 pounds. Was in the hospital after night one of the NCAA tournament. Managed to fight back and make sure he got managed to win. I think it was 3 matches in a row after Thursday night, after being in the hospital overnight, 1-3 in a row, got on the podium and finished his career as an All-American for Indiana. So, yeah, I think things are coming up. Hoosiers wrestling right now. They're in a good spot in the Big Ten, which obviously knows the premier wrestling conference. And you talk about Ohio State and Penn State, especially Penn State. Indiana's not that level yet, but they're doing a darn good job under Coach Escobedo.
Looking fun, brother. I appreciate you very much. Look forward to chatting some more about the pigskin later on.
Thanks, gentlemen. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate you. Nick Gosko from On3 joining us here from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Coach Griff, appreciate you again as well, brother.
Absolutely.
We're back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. Thanks a lot for joining us. Just finished up a great football conversation with Nick Gosko from On3 and our own Coach Griff as well. Looking forward to doing more of that as we get closer. Lots of basketball going on this weekend. Don't worry. And the Hoosier.com out covering it. As plenty going on down in South Carolina, as a matter of fact, there's a lot going on with the NBPA top 100 camp yesterday, day 1. Who was the MVP? Dylan Mingo. He moved into the top 5, number 4 overall for the On3 of the most recent rankings update. He's a 6'5" point guard Also, Latrell Allman had a great showing yesterday. His physicality, every time he comes out, is being talked about. Sturdy forward, 6'7", 6'8" kid. Sounds like the type of guy that a certain coach I know likes to recruit. But several of Indiana's recruits, Bryson Howard, even Purdue's Luke Ertl, the NBPA top 100 camp, runs a lot of side and high pick and rolls, so allowing the ball handler to get downhill and make a read. Luke Ertl plays with a great pace, and he is always on balance. That consistent center of gravity helps him to navigate in the paint and make the play for his team. Ertl has an array of finishes, showing a pull-up, a floater, and a finish at the rim. He's also an adept passer, identifying the defense and passing to his open players. Ertl shot 5 of 10 from 3 and 11 of 20 from the field on day one, while averaging 16 points, 7 rebounds, and 4 assists. Let me tell you, that is one that got away from Indiana. Luke Ertl, he's a player. Luke Ertl is really good. Really good. And he's going to be a thorn in Indiana's side. Several others on there as well. If you're a subscriber to thehoosier.com, you can find all of that in there, as well as the summer camp information, insider information that is inside the forums as well. And if you're not a subscriber, why not? It's the place to get the information. It's where the breaking news is now coming from. Just go to thehoosier.com. First month, $1, 50% off for the rest of the year. We would greatly appreciate that, as that's what helps allow us to bring you guys this great coverage. But Alec won't be on tomorrow. Kyler Staley from thehoosier.com will join us tomorrow. We'll talk more about this and as the play continues through then. In addition to Todd Leary joining us tomorrow. Then this weekend, team camps out at Indiana. And there are a ton of teams. I don't even know how many teams there are, but there are a lot of them. Jeffersonville, Fishers in a rematch. Indianapolis Addicts, Bloomington's North and South will be there as well, amongst many other teams, out-of-state teams. So there are going to be games going on all day. TheHoosier.com will be there to cover that at all. I will be going out there as well. Looks like it's going to be raining all weekend anyway, so perfect for that to jump aboard. So looking forward to that, and I cannot wait. Russell, Brad says these football flips drive me nuts. Well, it shouldn't if it works out for you, but if it doesn't, yeah, that's never a good thing. But this is nothing new. We've seen this before. I mean, kids have been, flipping their commitments. Now, the ones that kind of, flip-flop, that's not good. And what's the difference between a kid flipping a commitment and going in the portal 4 straight times? But, that's just something you're going to see. I don't think you're seeing a lot more of it. But what you are seeing more of it, obviously, because Nick Amalevin, the quarterback who left Tennessee, who screwed him over to go to UCLA to take less money. There's an example there. So it's going to happen. I like all things, eventually I think that it will level itself out. We'll have to find out. There's so many things you just can't predict how they're going to go, in which direction they're going to go, because there are decisions that have yet to be made, probably, that are down the road, or there may be issues that haven't been thought of somehow that still will be coming up. But regardless of that, man, another fun show today for us here at the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Back to do it again tomorrow with Todd Leary, Zach Osterman, Kyler Staley. We'll get you ready for the weekend and for the next Pacers game as well. Appreciate you guys joining us. Big thanks to our guest today on the program, Nick Costco from On3. Chris Denary from the Pacers, Bob Kravitz from BobKravitz.com, and Coach Griff from the Hoosier.com as well. Most importantly, thanks to each and every one of you. Without you, we've got no reason to be here. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.